This is The Litter of Bones, a DCI Jack Logan thriller. Written by J.D. Kirk and produced by Be Here. Episode 2. Logan was halfway across the car park when his phone rang. He cursed out loud when he saw the name flash up. Gordon McKenzie. Detective Superintendent Gordon McKenzie. The Gozer. As nicknames went, it went round the houses a bit. From what Logan understood of it, Gordon the Gopher had been an early draft, but it had been widely agreed by everyone at the time that it was far too obvious, and that should he overhear anyone referring to the Gopher in conversation, the then going places DS wouldn't need to draw on much of his polis training to put two and two together. And so, an alternative had been sought. Something that summed up his personality. Maybe gave a wee nod to the Gopher thing, but wasn't as blatantly on the nose. One of the DCs in the department at the time had been a big fan of Ghostbusters. And, what with McKenzie being a boggle-eyed bastard with a flat top, he'd been named after the film's villain. An equally boggle-eyed bastard with a flat top. If you wanted to get technical about it, the handle didn't actually stand up to scrutiny. The boggle-eyed flat-top bastard in Ghostbusters was Zool. Gozer was the unseen evil entity who eventually manifested as the stay-puffed marshmallow man. But any attempt by anyone to raise this as an objection was quickly shouted down. Gordon the Gozer just worked, and the Strathclyde Polis never let semantics get in the way of a solid nickname. Logan's thumb hovered over the green phone icon on the screen, shifted to the red, then back again. That wee rat bastard of a doctor must have got straight onto the Gozer before Logan was even out of the building. It was barely after 11 on a Sunday morning. The D-sub wouldn't be happy. He decided to answer. Better to face his wrath now than give it a chance to snowball into something worse.
Sir? To what do I owe the pleasure?
Where are you?
The Gozer asked. His voice was clipped, efficient. Either Logan was in more trouble than he thought, or something else was going down.
Just about in my car. Why?
We need you in the office. ASAP.
Logan grimaced. ASAP? The first time he'd heard the Gozer say that, he'd assumed it was a wind-up. Surely no one actually spoke like that. But aye, some folk did, it turned out, and the D-sup was one of them. What was wrong with now? Or even just a standard one-letter-at-a-time pronunciation of ASAP? Fucking ASAP.
Logan.
Sorry, here, sir. What's the score?
Best if I explain in person.
In person? So, the Gozer was in the office on a Sunday morning. Jesus, it must be serious.
I can be there in an hour.
An hour? What are you going to do? The moonwalk? When? Someday. End of the month. You've been in seeing him again, haven't you?
Logan made a non-committal noise. At least Ramesh hadn't phoned his old golfing buddy to report him yet. That was something.
We'll talk about this at a later date, Detective Chief Inspector.
His tone suggesting it would not be an enjoyable chat for at least one of them.
For now, just get yourself in here.
Will do, sir.
Oh, and if you're passing your house, you might want to grab some clothes and a toothbrush. Quickly, though.
How come?
You're being seconded. Up north, they've asked for you personally.
Logan stopped walking in the middle of the car park.
Whoa. Why?
You wouldn't believe me if I told you. Just get in here, and don't spare the horses.
Under normal circumstances, Logan would have appreciated the view. He wasn't that sort of guy generally, a view sort of guy. but there was something about the landscape of the route between Glasgow and Fort William that could grab even the most ardent non-view guys by the collar and force them to sit up straight. Most people thought it started at Rannoch Moor and continued to improve during the 20-mile build-up to Glencoe. To Logan, though, it started before that. The meandering road up Loch Lomond's side held its own charms, he'd always thought. Granted, you didn't want to get caught behind a campervan, and the old stone bridges were so narrow they regularly brought traffic to a standstill as two buses jostled for position, their wing mirrors kissing as they inched past. But despite all that, there were few places on earth quite like it. It had been a while since Logan had been up this way, and the Crean Larrach bypass was new to him. It shaved, by his reckoning, about 9 seconds off the previous route, and he failed to see the point. Considering everything else that needed doing on the A82, it seemed like an odd choice. From the new roundabout, it was a few minutes to Tindrum, a quick stop at the Green Welly for a slash, then on up the hill into the great beyond. It was round about that stage of the journey that he'd normally be forced to admit that actually, on reflection, Loch Lomond's side couldn't hold a candle to this. A couple of turns up the hill presented you with a view that almost went on forever, only interrupted by the conical snow-covered peak of Ben Doreen and its neighbour, Ben Andochy. That was how his thought process usually went. Not today, though. Today was different. The Gozer had been even more ashen-faced than usual when Logan had turned up at the office. The flat top that had once helped crown him in both a literal and metaphorical sense was now a distant memory, along with 80% of his hair in general. The boggly eyes were still a thing, though. Thyroid-related, apparently. Logan didn't like to ask. The DSUP had sat him down and offered him coffee. That was when the alarm bells had really started to ring. Logan had turned down the offer, keen by this point to crack on and find out what the hell was going on.
A boy's gone missing up north, near Fort William. Connor Reed, age 7.
The Gozer had said, rattling off the details as if reading from a list.
Last seen 2 days ago, 10 miles north of the town at...
He consulted a notebook.
Leonakin Forest.
So?
Logan had asked. Then he'd immediately winced at how it sounded.
I mean, aye. I saw something about it in the papers. Out with his old man, wasn't he?
The DSUP nodded the affirmative.
That's CID, though, surely. What's it got to do with MIT? Or with me, for that matter?
Behind the wheel of his Ford Focus, Logan flexed his fingers, exhaled slowly, then tightened his grip as he replayed what had happened next. He didn't want to be replaying it. Not again. But it had been on loop inside his head for the past hour and a half, and it didn't look like he was getting a lot of choice in the matter. Time had wound itself into slow motion as the Gozer had produced an A5 print. The thick photopaper had made a definitive click when the DSUP placed it on the desk in front of Logan. The image was new, yet familiar. Achingly, gut-wrenchingly familiar. A boy, a chair, a rope. Tears carving trenches down filthy cheeks.
It arrived this morning.
Jesus. Where? Here?
At the house. That's a copy the local boys emailed down. We printed it off.
Delivered on a Sunday? Courier?
Couriers don't run weekends up there.
Hand-delivered, then.
Still studying the picture.
Anyone see anything?
Not that we know of.
How was it delivered? Through the letterbox?
Left on the step.
The way the DSUP said it had made Logan look up.
On its own.
The Gozer had shaken his head, just once.
In an envelope, attached to a soft toy.
He gave that a moment to sink in.
Like before.
Recalling the conversation again, now made Logan's pulse quicken and his breath go short. He swung the car out into the right-hand lane and hammered the accelerator. Sweeping past an old Clio that had been crawling along at under 40, the driver probably admiring the scenery. It flashed its lights at him as he pulled back in. For a second, he considered hitting the blues and pulling the slow bastard over. But while he most definitely had the inclination, he was tight for time. He settled for raising a middle finger to the back windscreen, then continued on down the street, widening the gap between them. Even as he raced ahead, though, his mind went wandering back to Glasgow.
A copycat?
It hadn't been a question. Not really. A question implied doubt, of which he'd had none. Not then. He'd been surprised when the Gozer had given another shake of his head.
We don't know.
What do you mean we don't know? We do know. Petrie's in Carstairs. I spoke to him myself this morning. So I reckon we can safely score him off the list of suspects. No unless he's got a jetpack and a time machine.
The Gozer hadn't looked amused.
The envelope had the same message on the front. Surprise inside. Open me. Same typewritten text, same spacing. Same 3 exclamation marks after both statements. Same everything.
Logan had fallen silent at that. The details of the other envelopes had been kept secret. They'd never been given to the press, or even shared outside those closest to the original investigation.
Then it leaked. Someone leaked it.
Maybe.
Maybe?
Probably. I mean, aye. That must be it.
The Gozer had said. He'd sucked in his bottom lip, making his mouth go thin.
The only alternative...
The only alternative is we got the wrong man. That Petrie didn't do it. And we know he did.
The Gozer had perched on the edge of the desk then.
Do we?
What's that supposed to mean?
Logan had demanded, momentarily forgetting who he was speaking to.
Aye, we know he did it. We got a solid conviction.
The detective superintendent sighed wearily, but nodded.
Aye, I suppose so.
It's a copycat, boss. That's all. The envelope stuff leaked, and some sick bastard is out there playing at being Petrie.
Gozer said nothing at first. He picked up a stapler from the desk and fiddled with it, not making eye contact.
And if it isn't?
Logan stood. The face of the boy gazed imploringly up at him from the photograph.
Then it'll be down to God to judge us, sir.
Logan found the station after 2 false starts. It was situated across from a very loud, very active building site. And it was only as Logan pulled up that he spotted the BBC van tucked in behind a digger. He muttered something uncomplimentary as he pulled the Focus into one of the many empty parking spaces. Then, he got out, blanked the 5 strong pack of journalists who turned to study him as he approached, and pushed on through the station doors. The building had been constructed recently, and still had that new smell to it. Logan had been to the old station a few times over the years, and while it had been in need of a lick of paint and a bit of tarting up, he'd have taken it over this one any day. It was the remoteness he didn't like. The old station had been right in the middle of the town, right in the heart of the action. The new one was out on an industrial estate 3 miles from Fort William town centre. How were you supposed to keep on top of things way out here? It wasn't just that, though. The old station had felt like a proper nick. It had character and history baked into every one of its unappealing concrete blocks. This place was all plexiglass and curves, better suited to a call centre than a cop shop.
You all right there?
Asked a woman behind the screened-off front desk. She wasn't in uniform, but was instead dressed in a navy trouser suit and frumpy hairstyle that made her look 10 years older than she probably was.
DCI Jack Logan. Major Investigations Team,
said Logan, producing his ID. The woman opened a little hatch in the bottom of the plexiglass screen and motioned for him to slide the warrant card through. Fishing a pair of reading glasses from her pocket, she scrutinised the identification document.
What did you say your name was?
Logan. I've been sent up from the Central Belt.
No one told me,
the woman said, still holding on to the card. Logan gave her due consideration, then shrugged.
I don't care.
He pointed to a heavy door off to the right of the desk.
Can you buzz me in?
No one said anything about you coming.
Logan sighed, ran his hand down his face, then tried to readjust his features into something more friendly.
Look, sorry. What's your name?
She peered at him over the top of her angular glasses. Like the rest of her get-up, they looked designed for someone in their 60s.
Moira.
Moira. Moira what?
Corson.
Right. Nice to meet you.
He leaned on the edge of the desk, his face close enough to the screen that his breath fogged the plexiglass.
Listen, I'm sorry you weren't forewarned, but I've had a long day, Moira, and I suspect it's just getting started. So how about you do us both a favour and buzz me through, eh? Can you do that for me?
Moira held his gaze for a few seconds, then very slowly and deliberately placed his warrant card face down on the photocopier. She held his gaze as the machine whirred into life, scanning the document.
You'll have to sign in,
she said, indicating two ledgers on the desk on Logan's right. Wearily, Logan picked up a pen and began to write.
Not that one.
Logan drew her a fierce look, then tutted and signed himself in on the other book. By the time he'd finished writing, Moira had slid his ID back through the hatch.
Thank you,
he said, slipping it back into the inside pocket of his coat. He pointed to the door.
Now can...
The door buzzed, and Logan hurried to push it open. The buzzing continued a while longer until Moira eventually removed her finger from the button and silence returned.
Where did you say you'd come from again?
Glasgow.
Moira looked him up and down, taking him all in and not approving of what she saw.
Aye, I should have guessed.
You found it all right, then?
Asked D.I. Ben Ford, handing Logan half a cup of tea. Technically, it was a full cup, but there wasn't a lot of cup to fill. Logan wasted a couple of seconds trying to fit a finger through the handle, then gave up and wrapped his hand around the cup instead.
Eventually,
he said, taking a sip. He'd given up milk a few weeks back, and the tea tasted thin and disappointing.
The sign at the roundabout said Superstore.
Oh, aye. That's the sign for the new Tesco.
He was older than Logan, although Logan had never figured out by how much. He'd been no a kick in the arse off retirement for at least a decade now, but showed no signs of making the leap. For the most part, D.I. Ford was genial and soft-spoken. Gentle Ben, they called him. Although Logan had once had the pleasure of seeing him take down a wee Ned who'd been waggling a broken bottle around, and there had been hee-hawed gentle about it. He was a good few inches shorter than Logan, and lacked the girth that helped make the DCI so imposing. Still, he was a vicious wee bastard when he had to be, and while the arm of this particular lawman might not be all that long, you were in trouble if it got a hold of you. Logan took another sip of tea.
New Tesco. Is that what they're building across the road?
Hmm? Oh no, that's the hospital.
So?
Logan glanced out through the window at the waste ground beyond.
Where's the Tesco?
It's not happening.
It's what?
They're not building it. They changed their mind. They're building a hospital instead.
Logan blinked.
Who is? Tesco?
D.I. Ford gave a little chuckle.
No, Tesco sold the land.
But?
But they'd already put up the Superstore sign, so they just left it.
Logan's eyebrows raised, then lowered. Ford beamed a big, broad grin, then patted the DCI on the shoulder.
Welcome to the Highlands, Jack.
Then he jabbed a thumb in the direction of the incident room.
Shall we?
While Logan and D.I. Ford went back a fair few years, the other faces were completely new to him. No doubt he'd have seen one or two in passing at various events, but none of them were familiar to him now. Ford wasted no time getting stuck into the introductions.
"We'll start at the top and work our way down to the riffraff,"
Ben announced, shooting a look of mock contempt at our young detective constable who was perched with half an arse cheek on an otherwise uncluttered desk. Very few of the desks in the incident room were cluttered, in fact, which made Logan uneasy. He was used to rooms stacked high with documents, reports, witness statements, CCTV printouts, and all the other paperwork that piled up during an investigation. The fact that this one looked practically unused did not bode well for how things had been going thus far.
"You mean save the best for last, sir?"
said the DC. He was late 20s, Logan thought. Hair gelled, or waxed, or puttied, or whatever the hell they did with it these days. Stubble carefully cultivated to make it look like he just hadn't got around to shaving for a while. Logan got the measure of him right away. D.I. Ford gave a derisory snort.
"Ha! You tell yourself that if it helps, son."
Then he turned his attention to the only woman in the room.
"Detective Sergeant Caitlin McQuarrie. Originally from Orkney, transferred to Northern MIT in, what, 2016?
2017,
the DS said, and Logan detected just a bit of an island twang. Not the lilting chuchter of the Western Isles, but even in just those two words there was something that was unmistakably not of the mainland. Her hair was flame red, but cut short and tied back out of the way. She'd probably endured a lifetime of ginger comments, and the hairstyle was 100% about functionality, 0% about style. She was closer to Logan's age than to D.I. Ford's, 8 or 9 years younger than himself, Logan thought, which put her mid to late 30s. She was short and slight, 5'4", 5'5", but had a presence about her that would doubtless add a few inches when required.
"Much as it pains me to say so, Caitlin's one of the best detectives I've ever worked with."
"Arguably the best,"
the DS added, although the way she said it, light on the ego, heavy on the sarcasm, told Logan they were going to get along just fine.
"I suppose you could, technically, argue any old shite if you put your mind to it."
He moved on to the only person in the room who hadn't opened his mouth yet. A well-presented, mid-30s Asian man standing stiffly just a half-step removed from the rest of the group. He wore a new suit and a worried expression, and Logan would have put money on him having recently transferred.
"DC Hamza Khalid. Recently joined us from CID."
Confirming Logan's suspicions.
"We haven't really got to know each other that well yet, but I've heard only good things."
"We've obviously been talking to some very different people,"
volunteered the as-yet-unnamed officer with the landscaped stubble. Khalid shot him an anxious look, then saw the guy's grin and clicked that he was joking.
"Where were you based before?"
Logan asked, still trying to get the measure of the man.
"Aberdeen, sir,"
Hamza replied, and Logan found himself surprised by the heavy Doric accent. Aberdeen.
"Wait, Khalid."
Something stirring at the back of his mind. He clicked his fingers a couple of times, egging it on.
"Weren't you involved in that people trafficking thing with the fishing boats?"
"No in the actual trafficking part, sir, but it was one of the arresting officers."
He smiled, but wearily, like he thought his jokey remark might land him in trouble.
"From what I heard, you pretty much cracked the whole thing wide open."
Hamza was quick to shake his head.
"A team effort, sir."
"Aye, well, it was good work."
The DC seemed to relax a little then, the validation helping push away any thoughts of imposter syndrome.
"Last and, by every means least, Detective Constable Tyler Nish."
The DC flashed his superior a grin, showing off his well-maintained teeth.
"You love me really, boss."
Ben made a weighing motion with both hands. DC Nish held a hand out to Logan, but remained half-seated on the desk, Logan considered the younger man's offer, then extended his own hand, keeping his feet planted in a way that suggested he had no intention whatsoever of moving any closer. Ben smirked as he watched the power struggle unfold, knowing full well who was going to emerge victor. After a half second or so of internal struggle, Tyler stood, took the necessary step closer to Logan, then shook his hand just a little sheepishly.
Nice to meet you, sir.
Aye, I know.
Ben had to briefly turn away, his shoulders shaking with barely contained laughter. Logan waited until DC Niche had returned to his perch, then addressed the lot of them.
Thank you for the introductions, D.I. Ford. It's good to meet you all. Just a pity about the circumstances, but then I'm sure we're all used to that by now.
Logan realised he was still wearing his coat, and began the process of shrugging it off as he continued.
I'm sure Ben's already filled you in, but in case you need a refresher, I'm DCI Jack Logan. I was the arresting officer in the Mr. Whisper case a few years back. I've been brought in to lead the charge on this one because of the similarities between both cases.
He looked around for somewhere to put his coat, then tossed it over a chair, simultaneously disposing of the garment and staking his claim to that seat.
Let me make one thing clear before we go any further,
Logan said, meeting everyone's eye in turn.
Regardless of how similar aspects of these cases may be, Owen Petrie, Mr. Whisper, is not behind them. We caught him. We put him away.
Tyler raised a hand, but didn't wait to be asked.
Didn't he fall or something during the arrest?
Logan nodded.
Off a car park roof. Fell three floors, but lived to tell the tale. More or less.
How did that happen, sir?
Asked Hamza. There was a long, pregnant pause as Logan considered his answer.
I cornered him. I guess the old fight-or-flight response kicked in. He elected to fly, which went about as well for him as you might imagine.
Sounds like an unfortunate business, sir.
There was an edge to her tone that wasn't accusing exactly, but was certainly making an insinuation or two.
Very much so. Although on the bright side, it couldn't have happened to a nicer man. Regardless, we're 100% that we have the right man locked up, and we know he can't have been behind this latest abduction. So we need to figure out who is, find out where they are, and get that boy home.
He let that settle for a moment. Then when he was sure they were all on the same page, he looked to Ben.
What's the latest?
D.I. Ford cleared his throat. This seemed to be the trigger that switched him into police mode, and his previously avuncular tone changed to a much more businesslike one.
We had the handover from CID this morning. I thought DC's Niche and Khaled could go over the report and look through the statements, not that there's much in there. I've got uniform out, doing door-to-doors around the abduction scene, but it's going to take a while.
Logan raised an eyebrow.
Lots of doors to knock.
No, opposite problem. Very few, but they're all a long way down dirt tracks. Almost certainly a waste of time, but you never know.
Has anyone spoken to the parents again this morning?
Ben shook his head.
We've got a liaison there with them and a couple of bigger lads to keep the press from making a nuisance of themselves. But no, we've still to get round there.
I'll do that. Unless any of you already have a relationship.
The others confirmed that none of them had spoken to the family.
Right. I'll speak to them then. Be good to get a look at them. I want to look at this crime scene first, though. What about the stuff that arrived this morning?
Ben gave a nod to DC Khaled.
Hamza, could you?
Hamza sprang into life, crossing quickly to a desk in the corner, where a number of exhibits sat wrapped in plastic evidence bags. He retrieved three, placed them in a small cardboard box, and carried them back to the group. Logan peered in as the box was placed on the desk beside him.
This is a hand-delivered stuff.
He motioned back to the desk.
CID took the cards and letters that arrived over the past couple of days too. Nothing interesting as far as we can tell.
Right, good.
He was staring down at the contents of the box, fighting the rising urge to vomit. The bear was bad enough, with its faded grey fur and glassy eyes. It had been the first thing he'd seen, and the sight of it had stoked those initial fires of nausea. The photo was several magnitudes worse, of course. Connor Reed looked nothing like the previous victims, and yet exactly like them. He shared the same look of raw terror that the other boys had, and the staging of the photograph was similar enough to be more than coincidence. It was the envelope that tightened Logan's chest and set his guts churning, though. The gozer hadn't been lying. It was identical. Identical to those that Petrie had sent. The second he'd clapped eyes on it through the plastic, Logan had been transported back almost 15 years, back to when he'd first joined the ongoing investigation, back to when that bastard had been out there hunting wee boys, back to Dylan Muir, back to Lewis Briggs, back to Matthew Dennison, and to three families whose lives had been chewed up and spat out.
You all right, boss?
Logan blinked at the sound of Ben Ford's voice, whooshing back to the present.
Aye, fine. Have forensics looked at these?
Not yet. We need to get them up the road to Inverness for that.
Right. Aye, of course.
Logan said, irritating as news of the potential delay was.
I'll take a look at them first. Then one of the uniforms can horse them up there.
He stole another look into the box.
Do the press know about this yet?
Not that we know of.
Thank Christ. We keep this to ourselves, all right? This does not get out into the wild until we say so. D.S. Macquarie.
Caitlin's fine, sir.
Logan gave a brief nod.
Get the liaison over at the house. Make sure the family understands the importance of keeping shtum about this. The vultures are circling out there already. If this gets out, it'll be a bloody zoo.
Sir?
Caitlin said, before reaching for her phone and heading for an empty desk in the corner. He looked very deliberately to DC Niche.
Where do I get a coffee around here?
Tyler responded with a downturned mouth and a little shrug.
Dunno, sir. First time here.
Right then,
said Logan, picking up the box. He nodded to the door.
In that case, let's make that your first line of inquiry. Black, two sugars. Oh!
Tyler hesitated halfway out of his seat.
And make it to go.
Logan stood in a fine Highland drizzle, sipping lukewarm coffee through the narrow slot in a plastic lid and watching the SOC officers pack up their equipment. There had been a fresh surge of searching after the photo had arrived, and the missing child case had been confirmed as an abduction, and Logan was hoping some new nugget of information might turn up. No such luck. The second search hadn't turned up anything that wasn't already picked up first time round, and that wasn't much.
We got a footprint,
said Ben, gesturing off the path and into the woods.
Headed that way. Size 9 up 10.
Male, then?
Oh, a real brute of a lassie, aye.
Logan sucked some more coffee through the plastic lid and cast his eye across the surroundings. There was a cordon of tape blocking the path ahead, and then another back where the path started, just on the other side of an open gate. The little parking area beyond the gate was probably busier than it had ever been, thanks to the platoon of police vehicles currently crammed into it. Logan hadn't been able to squeeze the Focus in, so had abandoned it with two wheels on a grassy verge, the other half clogging up the already too narrow road. A few uniforms were scattered around, heads tucked into the shoulders of their high-vis vests, feet stamping to drive out the cold. D.S. Macquarie was over talking to some of the sock lot. She had a notebook open, but didn't seem to have heard anything worth writing down as of yet. The path, a gravel track probably wide enough for a forestry vehicle, provided the driver had his wits about him, stretched out for a third of a mile or more in both directions, before reaching the gate on one side and a bend at the other. That was almost a mile of visibility. Off to one side of the path was a couple of acres of scrub, tree stumps, and not a whole lot else. Not a lot of hiding places, and none within easy reach. Logan walked through it in his head.
So, the dad goes into the trees after the dog. Our man is presumably waiting in the trees, grabs the boy, and heads back into the forest before the dad gets back.
That's about the size of it.
Dog's been in.
Tracked him, headed northwest through the forest. There's a little car park, well, a bit of waste ground, really, but it gets used as a car park. Trail goes dead there.
Anyone see anything parked there?
Ben shook his head.
Sadly not, but an old boy at one of the cottages reckons he heard a motorbike, roughly around the time frame we're looking at.
Logan tried to visualise this.
Struggling kid on a motorbike. How would that work?
We're checking it out, but it's worth noting that the fella who told us about it is 93, has two hearing aids and reckons he invented Roger the Dodger. So we're not putting a lot of stock in it.
Sounds sensible, but worth checking.
I'm sure it won't come as a surprise, but we have no CCTV.
CCTV?
Logan looked around at the rugged Highland landscape.
I'd imagine colour TV is stretching it. What else do we have?
Ben consulted his notebook, flipped a page, then flipped it back.
Right now, that's about your lot. The scene of crime lot took a cast of the print, so we're trying to find out what kind of shoe it is. Walking boot of some kind, they reckon. But then that's pretty much par for the course up here.
What about the trees? Have the forensics guys searched the route the dogs followed?
To an extent, aye.
What do you mean, to an extent?
It's a big forest. And CID organised the search the day the boy went missing. Public got involved and trampled right through it.
Jesus Christ. So for all we know, the footprint belongs to one of them.
No, that was spotted before the search. Dogs went through before anyone else went in. We don't know much. But we are pretty sure on what we have.
Well, that's something.
A movement along the road leading to the gate caught his attention. A Sky News van drew to a halt behind Logan's car, unable to get past. The driver gave a couple of short blasts on the horn.
Did he...
Logan shifted his gaze from the van to Ben and back again.
Did he just toot at me?
He did. Twice?
Logan jabbed a finger in the direction of the van.
Do me a favour. Go over there and get rid. I'd do it, but I'll only end up strangling someone.
Ben was well aware of the DCI's feelings on the media and touched a finger to his forehead in salute.
No bother, boss. Although...
What?
We should maybe think about giving them something. Throwing them a scrap to fight over while we crack on. A quote, maybe?
A quote?
Logan ran his tongue across the front of his teeth, considering this.
How about crawl in a hole and die, you parasitic bastards? What do you think? Reckon that'll suffice?
Ben half smiled.
I'll maybe leave it for now.
Aye, maybe do that,
Logan told him. Then he teased another sip of coffee from the slot in the coffee cup lid as Ben hurried off to intercept the news van. The rain had abated slightly, the drizzle becoming something more akin to a damp mist that hung as tiny droplets in the air. If anything, it only served to make everything wetter, and Logan resigned himself to the fact that the chances of getting any new forensic evidence from the area were now practically non-existent. A footprint. That was it. A footprint, and maybe the sound of a motorbike. Not a lot to go on. Hopefully the teddy bear and photograph would give them something useful. Otherwise, they were in trouble. 2 days. That was how long Lewis Briggs and Matthew Dennison had been kept alive after their parents had received similar packages. 48 hours. That was it. And the clock was already ticking. Logan blinked and looked around. A long black face with bulging, mournful-looking eyes glared back at him from 20 feet away.
You've got to be kidding.
Clicking his fingers, Logan beckoned to one of the uniformed officers standing nearby.
You! What the hell is this?
It's a sheep, sir.
No, I know it's a...
Logan pinched the bridge of his nose.
I can see it's a sheep. I know what a sheep is. What's it doing on my crime scene?
The constable regarded the sheep.
Just standing there, sir.
Jesus Christ, how'd you get into the police, son? Was there a raffle?
He gestured angrily with a thumb.
Get rid of it!
For a moment, the uniformed officer just stood staring, his head tick-tocking between the DCI and the offending animal. Then, with a determined nod, he squatted down beside the sheep and tried to wrap his arms around it. It shrugged him off, bad in protest, then scuttled a few feet along the path.
Go on, shoo, piss off,
ordered a female uniformed officer, clapping her hands and stamping her feet. The sheep shot her a dirty look, then obligingly pissed off, picking its way through the scrub and tree stumps, headed for the rest of the flock standing gathered in the distance.
Thank you. Good to see someone's got some sense around here.
He glared at the male constable.
I mean, picking it up. Jesus!
Happy to help, sir,
said the female officer. She was young, early 20s, barely out of the cellophane, but carried herself like someone with 10 years more experience. Aye, she was bluffing it, Logan could tell. But then weren't they all on some level?
What's your name?
Sinead.
She shook her head, admonishing herself.
PC Bell, sir.
You down from Inverness?
No, sir. Local.
Logan drained the final dregs of his coffee.
Know the family?
My brother's in school with Connor. Year above, but it's not a big school, so they all hang out.
You've met his mum and dad?
A few times, aye. Don't know them well, but know them to see.
Good. I'm heading over to speak to them. You can come with me.
I can't, sir.
What? How not?
I'm finishing in 20 minutes.
Logan felt himself bristle. His face must have shown it.
I'd stay on if I could, but it's my brother, sir. He's at the babysitter and I need to pick him up.
Well, can't one of your parents do it?
Something flashed across Sinead's face. There one minute, gone the next.
No, sir.
Why not?
They're not available, sir. But I could maybe ask the babysitter to hang on to him for a couple of hours.
Right, good. Do that then, I'd appreciate it.
Sinead fished her phone from inside a vest pocket and turned away to make the call. Logan clicked his fingers and pointed to the male officer again.
You, Captain Obvious. Think you can manage to keep the wildlife off the scene?
I'll do my best, sir.
Good man.
He started to head for the car, then stopped a couple of paces in.
Oh, and try to resist molesting anything next time if you can. It doesn't reflect well on any of us.
This is A Litter of Bones, a DCI Jack Logan thriller, written by J.D. Kirk and produced by Be Here.